Well, hey, friend, welcome to Job with Julie, hosted by me, Julie Slattery. This podcast is listener supported, and it's an outreach of the ministry Authentic Intimacy, which helps people make sense of God and sexuality. When you think about couples divorcing, what age do you picture those couples being? You know, in my mind, I often think of the empty nesters or maybe parents who are just in the throes of the challenging teen years. But did you know the most common windows for a couple to divorce are the first 2 years and then years 5 through 8? Boy, those early years of marriage are no joke. They can stir up deep questions about faith and also expose areas of immaturity. Musicians Chris and Stephanie Teague married young and were together for about 3.5 years before their marriage came to an abrupt end in 2010. They are my guests today on Java with Julie. Their story has a surprise ending, so grab your Java and settle in for my conversation with Chris and Stephanie T. Chris and Stephanie, thanks so much for joining me for Java with Julie. I know a little bit about your story, and I'm so excited to hear the full version of what you've walked through and just the hope that your lives represent. So thanks for being willing to share.
Man, we're happy to be here. Any chance to tell our story is a good day.
Yeah. Now, you're both musicians. Do both of you sing? Do you play instruments? Kind of what's the breakdown there?
Stephanie wouldn't admit it, but she can play the guitar if she has to.
He's an incredible guitarist, so I don't play in our band.
Okay.
But we both sing and write our own stuff, and our band Out of the Dust was really birthed out of our story.
Uh-huh.
And all of my favorite songs are ones that she sings on and I don't sing on. So if that tells you anything about her singing ability.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
She's incredible.
Yeah. Did you meet through music?
No, we met in the holiest way possible, which was on a mission trip when we were in high school.
The sarcasm, in case you don't know us yet.
That is the holiest way possible. I mean, really, it's not like we met in a bar or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, that is true.
Yeah. There are worse ways to meet.
And were you both passionate about music at that point already?
Well, the reason she was drawn to me is because I was like playing guitar, probably John Mayer in a corner somewhere at the admission trip training. So it was definitely a corner piece of our relationship.
You know, I did band, like flute and piccolo. I am introverted. I was very shy. Didn't ever want to sing or play in front of people. So it was just like something I loved. I love music, but never something I imagined doing with my life or ministry.
And I want all the attention to be on me at all times. So I was happy, you know, playing guitar and being on stage.
Great combination. Did you start to sing together and perform together before you got married, or was that later?
Before we got married. And I mean, you'll hear this through our story, that was one of the earlier struggles in our relationship. Not like a huge struggle, but it was just, it's indicative of our relational happenings at the time. Like I have or had or do have, I can have a rougher voice, you know, I like the kind of bluesier stuff or whatever. And Stephanie's just so angelic and pretty and beautiful. And she can get bluesy and stanky too, but we just didn't see how our voices fit together.
With worship, yeah. We didn't write together or really perform. We started out by leading worship for a little college group in town.
Yeah. That's probably a good way to start.
Yeah.
The holiest way.
Yeah, there you go. I know. This is sounding very cliche. But
it won't.
We'll break all of that.
So you got married, high school sweethearts, shared love for music. When did things start to get really interesting?
Well, things for me got interesting. I always loved science and physics and quantum mechanics and all that stuff. And there's such a community now around questions about faith and doubts and all of that. But all of that stuff kind of clashed 10, 15 years ago when I was really into it. And I felt like I was given this choice. It was a false choice between faith and science or faith and reason, faith, you know. There's so many resources on that now, but I was kind of stuck in that place, and I didn't really feel like I had anywhere to talk to anybody about that. So I felt really lonely because of that. Meanwhile, I grew up without a dad, and he was never in the picture, and I didn't have an idea of what marriage was supposed to be like. And unfortunately, I'm also an idealist. I'm very idealistic. And so I had all these ideas of what marriage would be like in my head, and you know, a young man, how much sex we'll have, all the the wanting and desire and all. And I, marriage wasn't like that. So there was a lot of sadness too around that. I didn't call it sadness at the time. I just knew I felt frustrated. I didn't know that I was alone, but I was very lonely. And that just led us to dark places.
And I think at the same time, being in college, like you were in the recording industry. So that was a whole other like new worldview that you were being exposed to.
Yeah. So things were definitely interesting very quickly after we got married. Being as young as we were and still in school, still working, just time was such a precious commodity and connection was not as frequent as I think we would both have liked it to be.
So you kind of encountered, you grew up in a Christian home or church, it sounds like, but then you encountered real life doubt of, can I trust God? And science was sort of the impetus of that, some of the scientific questions, but then...
Yeah, exactly. I'm just curious. I'm curious and I'm honest with myself, at least, about that. I just didn't feel like I could be honest with anybody else. I felt so much shame and loneliness at that.
Shame because of what?
I just thought, if people knew what I'm watching, because it was almost like science was bad. You know, I mean, there's still some streams of that, you know, in politics and in faith. And so I just, I felt shame. Like, I don't know if they knew that what I was watching about black holes and quantum and physics and evolution or whatever, you know, that they wouldn't love me. I wouldn't, I wouldn't be enough for them.
Yeah. Intellectual porn, huh?
Yeah. Truthfully. Yeah. 100%. That's a great way to say it.
Read out of true questions. And that at the same time you're experiencing some disillusionment of what you thought God would give you in marriage, which a lot of married men and women both go through. So that sounds like kind of a perfect storm. And you've mentioned feeling alone often, that you were alone in all that. That's a hard place to be.
Yeah. I think so many people are there and they don't even know it. It's just like I was, you know, just very alone, but don't even know to call it loneliness.
Because well, you're surrounded by people. Like we were very involved in church and our families all in town being from there, you know, where we live around Nashville. And so I think it's easy to convince yourself that you're not alone when you're around people.
Stephanie, to what extent were you aware of what Chris was wrestling with?
Very little, very little. Like he mentioned, we were, you know, we were in school full time, working part time, involved in church, like I said. And I think being ships in the night, we didn't have a lot of time, just actual time to connect. And there were definitely times after, you know, that honeymoon phase, that first year or so, where we were not, our communication was not great. It wasn't healthy. And we knew that. And I knew that. But I think it was easier for me to just assume it's fine. Like we're busy. If we get to this next step, right? If we graduate, once we're in our jobs, once we get to, you know, X, Y, Z, we'll be all right. We'll figure it out. And so I just kind of blocked it off and thought it's fine. Let's just keep moving.
Yeah. Did you know he was experiencing like doubts and questions about God and science?
We had maybe one, I remember one conversation that we had about it, and it terrified me in my very untested little box of the Christian walk that I had, you know, what I thought Christianity was. And so I think, I don't know how I came across in that conversation, but I'm sure I wasn't a welcomed presence, you know, with those doubts, because I didn't know what to do with them, and it was scary. And so I think from that point, I just saw, well, okay, he's reading some books, you know, like Case for Christ and some of these books that you hear of that people who are wrestling with their faith that they should read. And I was like, oh, well, he's good. Like we've talked about it. He's wrestling with it. He's figuring it out. We've got great pastors, you know, it's okay. Yeah. So I just didn't, bring it up.
Everything's fine. Everything will be fine.
That was my mantra.
But that didn't end up happening. How did things unravel further?
Well, you know, my all the things that I was feeling, I mean, those, if we don't know what to do with that, it will drive us. It will cause us to, it will show up some way in our lives if we don't know how to process and express it. So I ended up, you know, I was in the music industry, like Steph was saying, and there's just a buffet of coping mechanisms to make yourself feel better. And, you know, I mean, the internet, and there's fake intimacy on the internet, you know, with porn. And so I got into drugs and alcohol and friends and parties and just really trying to find safety, any sort of respite. And it wasn't like things were just awful between Stephanie and I, you know, it's just it wasn't really alive. We weren't thriving. And that just sort of slowly killed me. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, all the other stuff is happening in my life with my questions and doubts, the drug use. And so all of that led me to a place of really just feeling like I didn't have any other option or anywhere else to go. No example that like, hey, things can get better. This is normal, like what you're going through. I didn't have anything like that. So I just started to believe this lie that in order to be happy, I had to leave, not just the church, you know, but my marriage, because it all felt kind of dead to me. And the way that I saw light and life was apart from what I had known. And so those lies were very believable, you know, when the enemy gets us alone, when we're experiencing loneliness in that way, and isolation, just deep isolation, you know, those lies can come in and really wreak havoc to our soul. And so I believe that lie and got my ducks in a row. I read all of those books that she says she saw me reading. I'm actually reading those not because I'm seeking. I'm reading it so that I can check the boxes off and be like, look, to myself and to anyone who would ask me in the future, look, I did all the right things. I read all these books. I've tried. I was already kind of done. Mm-hmm. And I sat her down in January of 2010. And we're just sitting next to each other on the couch. Hey, can you talk for a minute? And I just dropped a bomb containing 14 words, which were, I don't believe in God anymore. And I don't want to be married anymore.
Wow. Gee. Those are 14.
The bomb exploded.
14 powerful words. Yeah. And what year did you get married?
We got married in 2006. So we'd only been married about 3.5 years at that point. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I just have to pause for a minute and say, I'm sure you've encountered this too. There are a lot of couples who have been on a similar journey where 3, 4, 5 years into marriage, one of them, it just is wrestling and ends their marriage and often walks away from their faith in God. Have you run into couples that have similar stories?
Yeah. Every day. I think a lot of people, some people find us through our music, which a lot of is inspired by our story, but a lot of people will find us on social media or word of mouth, or we play at churches and they hear our story. And I think a lot of people don't hear the redemptive side of, you know, a relationship crumbling. So sometimes we're the first people have gotten to talk to who are just desperate for hope. And I mean, we spent an hour or so before this call, even just answering some messages on social media of people desperate for hope in their relationship.
Yeah. Can you talk, Stephanie, about where you were when those 14 words were spoken and just kind of what that sent you to?
Absolutely. I couldn't even process what was happening that night because it was such a shock. You know, words that I'd never, never expected to come out of my husband's mouth. And being a very logical thinker, it's like it wouldn't compute. It was not supposed to be my story, right?
Well, the story that you'd lived had been everything's fine, great home life, great family life. And if it's not great, I can make it great.
Yeah. You know? Do the right thing. The right things will happen. And that black and white thinking, it doesn't line up when your husband tells you that.
Yeah.
And so I went through every emotion, you know, the denial, the just utter devastation, the grief, the anger, all of it, you know, and I tried to convince him to stay. For, I guess, about a month or so, we were still living together in our house. And it wasn't like we had these screaming, like, fighting matches afterwards. I think you wanted to kind of save face, not be the bad guy. And we had actual conversations, but it was very clear, very quickly, that nothing I said or did was going to make a difference.
Yeah.
And so at that point.
Which is a great feeling.
Great feeling for someone who
powerlessness
finds
is
so
wonderful.
Much, found so much security and control. You know, that's what I realized walking through that is how much of my, my need to control. Mm-hmm. And so that year was such a journey for me of not only learning how to let go of that control, which I say journey and it's ongoing, because even now it's something I have to be reminded of, right? If you trust the Lord, like he's the one that can handle all of it and can take something awful and turn it into something good. And so for me, it was that. It was figuring out who I was outside of being a wife and being the good Christian girl, because that I realized how much of my identity was tied up in that. And also, I think the biggest thing that I'm so grateful, I can say I'm so grateful that I walked through everything we walked through, is because it showed me my sin. That I was too blind. I was so prideful and felt like I was this good Christian girl who, this wasn't my fault, right? Like, I didn't ask for the divorce. I didn't do anything to cause this. And God very graciously used that season in my life to show me that my sin was just as ugly, right? It was just in my heart, just that pride and self-righteousness. And he had a lot of work to do in changing my heart that I wouldn't have known or been aware of or known of my need for him and his grace had I not walked through it.
Yeah. And again, I hear that kind of story all the time where it's never something you would have asked for or wished on a friend, but God redeems it in some way of teaching you about himself and about yourself. You mentioned a little bit, but what did it feel like to be in your early mid-20s as a Christian girl and to wear that new title of divorced?
I think especially in the church, it comes with a lot of shame. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know how to tell people or what to tell people. Thankfully, I was and am still a part of a really great community. You know, our family is here, our church is here, and they were so supportive. And I don't know how people walk through anything difficult without having that support of people who are going to hold you up when you can't on your own. So I didn't necessarily feel that shame from my community. But as far as, you know, at my work, I didn't tell anybody. I was a teacher at the time. I didn't tell anybody for months because I just didn't even know how to talk about it. And I think just that idea of, oh, you're divorced, it makes people automatically think, oh, well, what was your part in it? You know, it would make me feel like they're looking at me like I did something wrong. Like I couldn't keep my husband, like I couldn't fix it. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of shame.
Yeah. And it's not appropriate to explain to everybody how it happened. And
exactly.
It's just, you just have to kind of live with what people are going to assume and think. And that's really, really difficult.
Yeah, especially if you're somebody who, you know, still has hope for God to do something, you know, for that to be open, that who knows? And as we tell more of our story, obviously, spoiler, we're here. So something happened.
Yes.
But you also, there's that fine line of you want to tell the truth, but you also don't want to drag your ex-spouse through the mud, you know, and in front of people. So it's really tough.
Mm-hmm. And lonely.
Mm-hmm. And lonely, yeah.
Chris, you stayed with Stephanie for a few months. And as you said, you already checked out. You're probably like just longing for freedom from the marriage, from, you know, all the expectations. What happened when you finally got that freedom?
It wasn't all roses immediately, because it was like this necessary evil that I had to do. I didn't want to hurt anybody. I've been very codependent. I very much want people to like me. And so I hated to, on some levels, to do what I was doing, but it was collateral damage that was worth it in my, you know, for the sake of what I thought I wanted and needed, which doesn't make me a hero. I was just really broken and lost and, you know, just deceived. And it was great for a while, even though it was so hard, but I'd been living in darkness and shame and loneliness and all of this hiding and secrecy for so long. I'm finally telling the truth. Nobody wants to hear what I'm saying, but for me, I'm actually telling the truth for the first time. And as much as I felt like I should, I didn't tell the whole truth, but even just telling the truth about who I was and who I'd been, it felt like this weight was lifted, even though I'm kind of placing that burden on others. And as hard as that was to walk through, it did feel really good. And now I'm free. I can do what I want to do. I can be who I want to be. All the things that I'm doing in secret, now I don't have to feel bad about it.
Yeah, and you filed for divorce within a couple months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Everything was final. But that's just not how the universe works. I was actually just diving deeper and deeper into my own isolation of my own heart and not facing the things that I was actually feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, I just kind of pushed everything away and hoped that the baggage wouldn't come with me. You know, I got into new relationships. I found girls who I felt like treated me the way I thought I wanted to be treated and gave me what I thought I wanted. And more drugs and alcohol and friends and parties and just a living example of the prodigal sort of son, you know? Mm. And but like I said, that's not how the universe works.
Yeah. Before you keep talking about please. That, I'd love to ask Stephanie, how aware were you of what Chris was doing and engaged in? And like, how did you set those boundaries in terms of still loving him, praying for him, maybe having hope? But the more he's making these kind of decisions, like, were you aware of that? Or did you just like, nope, our lives together are done?
Some of it, to a certain degree. You know, the world of social media for a while, I could see, you know, the pictures he was tagged in and the people he was with, and I knew it wasn't good. Mm-hmm. So I very quickly set the boundary for myself to not look at that stuff anymore, you know, take him off my feeds and all of that. We texted a little bit at first, but once the divorce was final and a little bit before even, we just emailed because it was too painful. Yeah. It was too painful to continually have conversations, even if it's just over like, oh, we have to pay the electric bill. Your name's still on it. You know, all those little things, which are painful in and of themselves, right? It's like little daggers every time. But it was the other conversations. It was too much. So I think I didn't fully know about all of like the drug use and alcohol. I knew a little bit. I thought it, even before he dropped the bomb on me, he had admitted one time to being involved with some friends after work. And so I think I just thought, well, once every, you know, however often. But even while we were separated, I didn't really know the full truth. But the holding on to hope thing, I think, is the hardest thing to quantify and to explain, because I did have hope for, I think, a long time, even up until even signing the divorce papers. You know, I had watched a really close friend go through something similar a year before, very similar situation. They were both believers and he left. And I watched how hard the process was for her and her trying to fight for him. And I just felt God give me this peace about signing. You know, it was like, I didn't hear it audibly, but it was like him saying, you know, I'm not tied to what signatures on a piece of paper say, you know. So I felt a peace about, you know, I said everything to Chris I wanted to say, what my desires were, but that I was going to sign because that's what he wanted. So I was going to give that to him. But at some point, I think it was along the lines of when that letting go happened. Again, it's not really a moment I can say, like I had this crazy night one night where I knew, you know, and crying, all the things. It was just very much an ongoing process for me. But somewhere along that line of when I'm learning what it means to let go and trust God with my future, whether Chris is in it or not, because I think I did get to a point, you know, several months after the divorce, I didn't think that Chris was going to be a part of my story anymore. So I still prayed and hoped that he would come back to the Lord. But at a certain point, call it self-preservation, maybe, I wasn't still clinging to the thought of he's going to come back.
Yeah.
Like God's going to redeem this. Because I don't know.
No, it's part of moving on.
Yeah.
And that's a hard thing, because when you're dating, engaged, married, all your effort is how do we become one? How do we serve each other? How do I love my spouse well? And you can't just turn that off to like, now we're not together and it's actually not healthy for me to constantly be thinking, how do I win him back and how do I hope for him to come back? So that's a tough, tough road. And it sounds like God really had to release you from that, even if you still had some hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, hey, friend, if you are a regular listener to the Job with Julie podcast, do you often find yourself sharing episodes with friends or maybe posting about us on social media? If that's you, first of all, thank you. That's how a lot of people hear about our ministry in this podcast. But also, would you consider leaving us a review on your preferred podcast app? Reviews are a great way for us to stand out in more searches, and they help people who are looking for answers to questions about God and sexuality find us. If this podcast and the Ministry of Authentic Intimacy are a blessing to you, please consider leaving such a review. All right, let's get back to my conversation with Chris and Stephanie Teague. All right, Chris, so you're the prodigal son. When did you start eating the pig food?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't have to tell you or the audience, anyone listening, that, like I said, the universe doesn't work that way. We desperately want it to. We really want to be able to control our lives and be enough for ourselves and make the things that we've found work for us. But it didn't. And I got into a relationship, and the way that it ended, it kind of, it both exploded and imploded. And it's a much longer story. But, you know, there was an event around a relationship that I was in that sort of, it just pulled the veil off of my eyes. And everybody has different rock bottoms, and comparing them is not helpful or fruitful. But suffice it to say, I did hit sort of that rock bottom moment where all the things that I'd been trying to push away and keep at bay, and they all just came crashing in, and I couldn't stop it. And I couldn't manage my life the way that I'd been living it. And I was waking up in cold sweats. I was battling anxiety and waking up and looking in the mirror at just like a shell of who I thought I would be once I'd left. And in a kind of crazy turn of events, God found me in the weirdest way possible. My dad had left me a Bible, and it's a really kind of dark night of the soul, and opened it up. And I'm not sure the exact order of events, but there was this letter from my dad inside of this Bible. And Stephanie had left this Bible out on my nightstand or my dresser when she left, the day she moved out. And I saw it there, and I was like, come on, this is, come on, really? I see what you're trying to do here. So I just threw it in a drawer. But when we're at our deepest, darkest moments, we kind of revert to those things that, you know, that we found helpful or hope could help us. I was looking anywhere for anything. And inside the cover of this Bible, you know, I mentioned I didn't grow up with a dad. He had his own story of recovery, and he'd left me a Bible. That was like one of the one things he'd left me, because he passed away when I was 12. And on the inside cover of that Bible, it was a letter from my dad. And it said, you know, one day you'll question everything that you've learned, but on that day, remember that Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life, and nothing you've done could keep you from his love. That's a pretty remarkable flare in the sky, rainbow in the clouds moment. It's feeling something that I couldn't understand, something that I didn't know how to engage with. I didn't know how to engage with God or how to step into this mystery that seemed to be reaching out to me, but in my own way. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, did you ever see that note before? Did you just discover?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd seen it before, but you know, some, you can read a Bible verse a year apart and it means something completely different to you. And so I wasn't ready to hear what that letter was trying to tell me. And I also wasn't ready to hear what God had been trying to do and what God had really sort of let the leash out, you know, for me to go and discover on my own. I wasn't ready until I hit that sort of moment of desperation. And in that, God moved in. I just started being honest. You know, my life up till then had been sort of this bifurcated, duplicitous existence where this group knows this person and this group knows this person. And there's also the real me, which is somewhere in the middle. And I just started being honest about that, not only to myself, but with God through prayer. You know, in the Psalms, we find these like brutal prayers of honesty and anger and indictment against God. And my life and my prayers started to look like that. And things would jump off the page at me from scripture, like I just mentioned, things that I'd read before. But here they are just speaking new life into my heart. And it's a very short season of time where this sort of happened. It was maybe a matter of just a couple of weeks or three. And throughout that time, it just felt like God just kept bringing back these thoughts, these sort of desires of my heart. And I ignored it at first, but there was this message, this one thing that kept coming back again and again and again. And it was that I was supposed to pursue Stephanie again, that we were supposed to be married again. Even though I told Stephanie, hey, even if I find God again someday, even if I believe and I'm a Christian again, we just don't work. We're too different. We got married too young. And yet here I am, not even a year later, finding this desire in myself to, and this belief and that God is speaking directly to me, kind of telling me this.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's intense.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, usually you don't hear all that happen within such a short time. Obviously you got married again. So how did that happen? Like, what was that first conversation like where you're trying to explain to Stephanie what God is showing you and the fact that you want to be with her?
Yeah, well, I reached out to her parents first because my mom had been in contact with both Stephanie and her parents. We're pretty close. And,
well, you are a son to my parents. You know, we live 3 minutes down the road.
And that's, you know, that's part of the grief that we didn't even mention. Like when you go through something like this, your whole family goes through it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I reached out to them first. I guess that seemed like the chivalrous thing to do. And spoke with them, and they got in contact with Steph. And sure enough, like I think it was that same night that I went over to the house that we're sitting in now, that Stephanie had bought on her own. Went over, and she wouldn't let me in, but we ended up walking the neighborhood. Like,
I wasn't being mean. It was
just a boundary,
you know.
Maybe a little bit.
It's a boundary. Well, and this house was the place where we. You know, I bought it and my family and friends, we wrote scripture all over the floor. It was like my sacred space. Mm-hmm. So
it was safe.
It definitely was. Yeah. And it was a message to me too, you know, like a healthy message to me. But we walked the neighborhood and it was just incredible. Like to hear what God had done in her through this season of awful torture and suffering, and for her to hear what had been happening in my life. And then it was this beautiful night. Did I say 5 hours? I mean, we were
5 hours.
It was like forever. Wow. And then everything in me didn't want to say what I thought God had been telling me, but I'm not a disciplined person. And I was caught up in the night and I was caught up with all of these emotions. And so I just blurted out at the end of the night that God told me we're supposed to be together again. And Stephanie didn't respond with,
okay.
Yes, let's do it. Yeah. I was so confused. Why don't you see?
The universe doesn't work that way, Chris.
The universe doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So, Stephanie, there was a long journey ahead of us. And you can speak into that a little bit.
Yeah. Anybody who's gone through any sort of betrayal or abandonment, you know that trust takes time.
Yeah.
And even though I had forgiven him, like that is something that you can choose to do and we're called to do if, you know, you believe what the Bible says. And I had forgiven him, but I needed time. I needed time to know that the change that I saw, because I saw this authenticity, this vulnerability in him that night that I'd never seen before. You know, I saw Jesus like in him and in our interactions and I believed him, but I needed to know that that change wasn't about me, that that was about him and the Lord. And it was fresh still at that point. So we decided to take a few months just separately pursuing what the Lord had for us. And I needed to hear a message just like he did to be convinced.
For sure.
Because I believed that God is, he's still a God of miracles. You know, that didn't stop when the Bible closes, right? And so I knew that he could do something with this, but it was also a huge risk for my heart again.
Right.
So we were doing, I think you had already started, we're about to start counseling. We did some counseling separately.
And as a funny anecdote, just to tell you what this season was like, we were kind of emailing. We weren't talking as much, but we were emailing a little bit here and there. And I got an email from Stephanie that was like, I think we need to take a long, like, we need to just go and think about, you know, and pray. And our journeys don't need to involve each other right now, at least for the time being. And then like 2 days later...
It was wasn't 2 days. It was not short. Well, and he knows this because we are in the process of writing a book and editing and all of that.
I wouldn't remember that otherwise. That's the only reason I know.
We went back and found all our old email conversations. I had thankfully somewhere along the line thought to save them. But anyway, I needed to see the evidence. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't want us to be in conversation all the time or pursuing a relationship. I wanted to know what he was learning. I wanted to know what the Lord was revealing to him. So we still did, for the most part, take a few months.
But, it was funny though.
Yeah. But we, we were asking, involving our community, which we didn't do before. You know, we did so much alone the first time. We were surrounded by people, but nobody really truly knew us. Mm. And so, you know, our pastors knew what was going on, our family and friends. So everybody could be praying on our behalf. And
God's heart is for restoration, for reconciliation, yeah. for wholeness, completeness, shalom, right? Yeah. Like in the world, like that's what he wants in us and for us to give to the world. And we knew that. And God all along that path is broken and is 2 steps forward, 3 steps back as it was. Like God just continued to give us what we needed when we needed it to continue down this path. And it wasn't easy, but at a certain point, we did do counseling separately, and then we came together with the same counselor and him along with our community and family and pastors and friends. We didn't like send out a survey or anything, yeah. but like it just sort of seemed, you know, like we were all just sort of praying together and seeking the Lord. And our counselor said, hey, I think if this is the path, I think God has allowed you to go through this trial and through this journey, and you're as ready as you can be to step into something new.
Yeah. Boy, I love that you said, Steph, too, that you needed to know that the change was about Chris and God, that it wasn't mm-hmm. that he changed his mind about you, but he was really becoming like Christ. He was a new man. And that does take time because your emotions can change within a month or two.
Yeah.
Clearly. Yeah. And I talk to guys a lot and we just go into this kind of fix it mode, mm-hmm. you know, like we want action, we want results, we want to fix it. And really the greatest gift of those hard seasons is just to stop and slow down and feel the thing that you're trying to fix.
Yeah.
And don't try to fix it, just feel it. And because you're probably if you're trying to fix it too hard, too much, you're probably trying to push something away that God wants to reveal in you and work on you. Mm,
that's a good word. You guys, I mean, your redemption story is beautiful. The reality is that the majority of people that you talk to who are walking through what you walk through mm-hmm. aren't going to reconcile. Like we pray and hope right. for more, but it really did take a complete change of heart. And not everybody that walks away from the Lord or walks mm-hmm. away from their marriage is going to have that change of heart. Can you talk mm-hmm. To that individual, to the man or woman who they're like, yeah, I had your same story, but it didn't have the happy ending?
Because we meet so many folks with that story, just transparently, I think when we first started this ministry, it was just like we had this hopeful, youthful naivety, mm-hmm. you know, and life tempers that. But we do more than anything. My favorite kinds of messages or stories that we get are people who do reach out to us like that. Maybe it's not even a marriage story. Maybe it's something completely different, or maybe their marriage didn't work out, but through like they just see the thread of hope throughout all humanity in every story, because God is not the author of one singular good ending, mm-hmm. right? Like God is the author of many good endings. I wish I'd come up with that, but I didn't. But it is true that God has so many different ways to write and rewrite our stories and to interject himself into the suffering, into the brokenness of the world and of our lives, and make something beautiful. And that is our banner. We mm-hmm. say all the time, and she probably was about to say it, that we say that God, the best thing that God did in our lives wasn't restore our marriage, is that he restored us. He grew us through suffering, through the trial. And then we were ready to be remarried. But the truest blessing and gift was that God found and redeemed and restored and grew us as individuals through that story of suffering and brokenness.
Yeah, we say all the time, like he doesn't waste anything. Mm-hmm. He doesn't waste our suffering and our trials and those seasons of waiting. You know, there is no waste in God's economy.
That doesn't mean it's easy.
It does not mean it's easy.
But it's not wasted.
Did you know that 6% of couples who divorce end up remarrying each other, like Chris and Stephanie? You know, I think it's important to recognize that means 94% of couples don't end up marrying each other. Chris and Stephanie's story is not every divorced couple story, but I think the most important thing we need to focus on is the fact that God wants to redeem every story. And that's where God started with Chris. And that was the reminder Chris and Stephanie give to all of us at the end here. Now, if you've been divorced, or maybe you're right now going through a divorce, know that God is still writing your story. Whether you reconcile with your spouse or not, God is not through with you. He's still working to restore you, to heal your heart, heal the brokenness and sin in your life, and to use you as His vessel, His way for revealing Himself to the world. That is the beauty of the work that God did for each one of us on the cross. As you heard, Chris and Stephanie are musicians, and their band is called Out of the Dust. They actually have a new album coming out this Friday, April 26th, which you can listen to on iTunes or Spotify, or purchase that on their website, which we've linked to in our show notes. And if you're looking for more resources, perhaps on divorce care or healing in general, we link to a Q&A in our show notes, Where Do I Begin Healing? We've also included a link to a page that's full of resources on healing. Well, friend, that's all I have for you today, and I look forward to being with you next week when we talk all about attraction and desire. So make sure you don't miss that.